In CI News this week, evidence sessions on Kim Leadbeater's assisted suicide bill expose serious shortcomings in her proposals. The government rejects civil service calls to broaden the definition of extremism, and tens of thousands of pro-lifers take a stand against abortion at the annual US March for Life. Hello and welcome to CI News on the 31st of January. I'm Joanna Tim. The Westminster Committee tasked with scrutinising Kim Leadbeater's controversial assisted suicide bill has been hearing oral evidence. Over the course of 3 days, more than 40 witnesses, including medics, disability campaigners and lawyers, addressed MPs on key aspects of her proposals. While the evidence sessions were heavily skewed in favour of those who support the proposals, concerns were raised about access to palliative care, the robustness of the bill's so-called safeguards, and its compatibility with human rights legislation.
We're not entirely clear that a private member's bill is the suitable vehicle for this, to be entirely honest. Were it a government bill or a government-sponsored bill, even at this late stage, it could have a whole-of-government approach to looking at the different aspects that are engaged of disability rights, of older people's rights. Ethnic minorities have very differential attitudes to some of these things, cultural rights, and I think that would be a better place for Parliament to actually engage with this profoundly important issue.
This issue highlights a fundamental flaw with the bill, which is this nonsensical division between a terminal illness and what constitutes being a disabled person. For myself, with a progressive condition, which continuously gets weaker and has respiratory complications and so on. If I remove my ventilator, which I use at night, if I remove my medical devices and my engagement with therapeutic services, does that constitute then that I will have a terminal illness?
The question before you is, could this bill have knock-on effects that affect some of your most vulnerable constituents? And how many deaths are you okay with? That's really, if the safeguards fail once, that is a human being who maybe in a despairing moment was handed a lethal medication instead of the care and the treatment and the health they need. That's what we're talking about. So you really have to get this right because those people are depending on you.
We need to get palliative care sorted out and improved right now. Mm-hmm. And now as part of this bill, because they're fundamentally connected. This bill is about choice. It's about choice at the end of life. If people can't choose to access palliative care, they cannot make a free choice about the care and support that they receive.
Our senior researcher, Rhys Curnow, is with me now. Rhys, what's your assessment of this week's evidence sessions?
Over 3 days, the committee heard from over 40 witnesses. There were doctors, palliative care experts, psychiatrists, disability advocates, lawyers as well. And I should say that those in favour of the bill certainly outnumbered those who were against the bill. The sessions did feel quite rushed, as if the witnesses couldn't always get across exactly what they wanted to say. But having said that, there were lots of good points that were raised. One of the themes that came out of the sessions was how difficult coercion is to accurately detect in someone who's terminally ill. And also the fact that if assisted suicide were to be legalised, then it really wouldn't bring any meaningful choice for those who are terminally ill because of the lack of equitable access to good palliative care.
And what about those in favour of the bill? What did they have to say?
Well, even from those in favour of the bill, some of their comments ought to ring alarm bells for MPs on the committee and MPs more widely. For example, many of them, or several of them, said that being a burden is a perfectly good reason to seek assisted suicide. And even that family members should not try and dissuade a loved one from seeking to kill themselves. Now, MPs will meet again on the committee from the 11th of February to consider the bill line by line and to consider possible amendments to it. And that'll be ahead of a final third reading vote on the bill in the spring.
Thanks, Rhys. In other news, the government has rejected calls to expand its definition of extremism. Ministers dismiss a civil service report that called on the government to focus on activity of concern, such as spreading misinformation, instead of ideologies of concern. Home Office Minister Dan Jarvis MP reiterated that ideology, particularly Islamist extremism, followed by far-right extremism, continue to be at the heart of our approach to countering extremism and counter-terror. Christian Institute Director Kieran Kelly told TWR the government was right to reject the report and should focus on violent extremism, not unpopular views. Between 2011 and 2021, the number of gender-confused children in England soared, according to a study of GP records. By the end of the decade, the number of children diagnosed with gender dysphoria had risen 50-fold from 1 in 60,000 to 1 in 1,200. Over half of the children had anxiety, depression, or a history of self-harm. The researchers called for better mental health treatment for gender-confused young people. And finally, tens of thousands of pro-lifers, including Vice President J.D. Vance, gathered in Washington, D.C. to turn hearts and minds against abortion. Jenny Bradley Lichter, set to be March for Life's new president, encouraged those braving the cold to keep campaigning until abortion is not only illegal, but unthinkable. To explore these stories and much more, visit our website christian.org.uk and be sure to subscribe and follow us across our social media channels. Thank you for watching. Have a blessed weekend.